Thanks for joining us on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain, with South Dakota State University Extension. This is episode 6. Let's talk about controlled drainage.
Sure.
And we're going to bring in Matt Helmers.
Matt Helmers, director of the Iowa Nutrient Research Center at Iowa State University.
Matt's working on a project, among many things. One of the projects Matt's on is the Transforming Drainage Project. And one of the practices of the Transforming Drainage Project is something called controlled drainage. You're familiar with controlled drainage, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. And so you've seen the control structures and
those little mini dams you put in.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're basically damming up the water in a tile system.
Holding it back,
yep, to keep it when you don't need drainage or, you know, hold any timely rains or whatever.
When your field operations are done.
And exactly, when your field operations are done, it's a great way to hold water back.
Yep.
We talked to Matt, and he identified two big reasons that we would consider controlled drainage.
Probably two reasons. One is, you know, there are increasing concerns about nitrate export from our tile drained lands. And we found that controlled drainage can help us reduce that direct tile discharge and nitrate loss to the stream. Also, it may hold back some water that in certain conditions, it'd probably be kind of idealized conditions, but certain conditions might provide water for the cropping system in the field.
So yeah, nitrates, load reduction.
Sure.
And
water conservation.
Water conservation. So if you're a producer, you are a producer. Why am I saying if you were? You are a producer.
I know a lot of producers.
Well, you are a producer too, Anthony.
A small one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So water is one of the biggest things, really, either too much or too little. Right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, one of the ways that we deal with too much is through tile.
Yep. Get rid of it so we can traffic our fields.
You can traffic your fields so you don't drown your roots out. But how many years have you had a field that's too wet in the spring and it's too dry in the summer?
At the same time, very, very rarely.
Okay.
But it does happen.
What about, say, back-to-back years? Or, I mean, would you have a wet spring one year and a dry summer the next year?
Yes, that could happen.
Mm-hmm. So controlled drainage gives us a little more flexibility on that drainage system. Those control structures, they act as a dam, like you said, and you can hold water back.
Absolutely. I love the concept because that water that we get is a gift.
It's a resource.
Absolutely. It's a resource. It's free. And then we see it go away and it's like, wow, what could we have done with that?
Yeah. So controlled drainage is one way you can think about that differently.
So the primary way that it's helping to improve water quality is to reduce direct drainage discharge. So we're working on a synthesis paper that's looking at the impact of controlled drainage across the Corn Belt. We don't find a change in the concentration of nitrate coming out of that drainage water, but what we're doing is we're holding some of that water back. And as a result, the nitrate load going downstream, if the concentration doesn't change, but the water flow goes down, our, you know, pounds per acre of nitrate delivered go down.
Excellent. So how does it perform? How well do we reduce nitrate?
So it depends, I guess. It depends where we're at any given year. For one of our sites down in southeast Iowa, we're seeing about a 40 to 50% reduction in nitrate load in going downstream. And one of the things that we're finding as we look across the Corn Belt over a variety of years is we see similar kind of inches of flow reduction, no matter if it's a dry, wet, or normal year or average year. And so, you know, I think that it helps us in any kind of year. On a percentage basis, it's probably going to help us more in a dry year than a wet year. But on an absolute kind of flow reduction, you know, inches of flow reduction, pounds per acre of nitrate loss reduction, it's pretty similar across all those types of precipitation pattern years.
So that's something really interesting to me because I would think there'd be a difference, right? But it seems like the controlled drainage system pretty much has a capacity. And once it reaches that capacity, and that capacity can be reached in a dry year. And once it reaches that, you know, that's how it's going to perform.
Absolutely.
So
that's pretty universal.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And the other thing is a lot of times we get hung up on concentration. Right. I mean, we'll measure concentration out of a tile or in a stream or in a river. I mean, that's what I think that's driven because that's what the drinking water standard is. You got to hit 10 parts per million for it to be legal drinking water. But concentration's only half the story when we look at drainage systems.
Because it's the load.
Because it's the load that we care about. And we don't put nitrate on or nitrogen on in a concentration. We put pounds of whatever on, right?
In an amount.
In an amount. And so controlled drainage, it doesn't do anything for us for concentration. But the way it helps us is it reduces that flow. And by reducing that flow, we reduce the load.
Less goes out.
Less goes out. So one of the questions I asked Matt was, you know, how does controlled drainage perform from east to west? I mean, there's a really pretty significant precipitation gradient. And as we go north, there's a temperature gradient, obviously. And one of the things that he talked about was kind of the timing during the year of when we lose nitrogen, as well as the timing of when controlled drainage is most effective when we're seeing those reductions.
So one of the things is when we started looking at the studies across the region, we expected to see some differences in overall load reduction. We've not seen as much of that, but we've seen a change in when that load reduction occurs. So in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, Ohio, Indiana, we see more of the drainage in some of the winter months, late fall into winter, and we'd call winter January, February, March. And so they're getting a lot of their load from the drainage system and then ultimately load reduction with controlled drainage in those winter months. Whereas in South Dakota, southern Minnesota, Iowa, we're getting more load in the spring, but more of the flow reduction in the spring just because that's when it's happening. So as we look across the Corn Belt, it performed pretty reasonably and similarly across there, but we did see the timing change with more load and load reduction in winter months in the east, more load and then load reduction with controlled drainage as we move to the west and north part of the Corn Belt.
To me, I'd say that means there's really a lot of opportunity for controlled drainage, especially in maybe more milder climates. And to me, it presents a little bit of a challenge because the closer we get to planting, the sooner that you want to pull those boards, right?
Right.
And so that potentially creates a challenge because we're fighting two things. We're fighting nitrogen loss as the ground warms up and thaws out and those tiles are running. But then we're also fighting being able to get in the field
and do our work.
Do the work and get your seed in the ground. So it's still a practice that I think can benefit water quality in South Dakota, but it may be not as straightforward as if we were in Indiana.
Well, we're limited by water, so water conservation, I think, would be good in some of those years.
That's absolutely right. And we'll see what Matt has to say about kind of the yield aspects and if there's any potential benefits there.
I think it's pretty economical. You know, if we have field sites that are pretty flat, that we don't need a lot of control structures, I think it can be pretty economical because really the extra cost is in the control structures. Now, you might have a little bit, you know, we're going to lay our tiles along the contour a little more. So you might have a little bit more tile or maybe a little bit more installation costs there. But I think it can be a pretty economical type of system, maybe in line with some of the things like saturated buffers, bioreactors, even wetlands, kind of depending on the system. And I would just encourage, you know, any producer that's thinking about drainage, try to design it and install it with controlled drainage in mind. So you might not put it in now, but if you design for that in mind, it'll be easier to retrofit into the future. So that's putting our laterals a little more along the contour, maybe running the main up and down the slope a little bit more.
So this can this work with targeted drainage? Because I think Matt is really referring to more of a grid pattern or overall drainage of the whole landscape.
Like he's referring to pattern tiling versus targeted tiling.
Right. South Dakota has mostly targeted drainage.
Yeah.
Where there's an issue and a problem in a certain area of the field, and then they just go after that.
Yeah. You know, Anthony, that's a really good question, and I think it can work for targeted tiling. The question is the slope. So if you're going up, you know, a significant slope change, like one of your fields, it's pretty steep, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's what, 10 or 15 or 20 feet from top to bottom?
Oh, it's more like 75 or 80.
Oh, okay. I was way off there. So, okay, 75 or 80 feet, then, you know, you'd have to put in 40 control structures if you
right.
were going to control the whole field with right. that.
Kind of cost prohibitive.
That's very cost prohibitive, yeah. And so I think that's the biggest question about whether it could work, you know, pattern tiling or targeted tiling. What's the slope? What's the difference in elevation going to be, and how much land you can control with each control structure? Another thing I asked Matt about is kind of what he sees as the future. Like, what should we get excited about for controlled drainage?
I think maybe a couple things. You know, I think that there is some work with water gate structures that are kind of buried. Looking at those and their longevity and how they work, I think is important, because then you might not have as many structures coming out of the ground in a field. You know, I think there's a lot of interest in automated management, you know, our automated systems, so that it's on your smartphone, you tell it to raise or lower the gates so you don't have to go out there and do it. Or if there's a rain coming, you can easily, you know, raise the gates to allow a little bit more storage capacity in the soil. I think those are aspects that would help the adoption in a way, or maybe help the management of that. So, you know, it's not just kind of set it and forget it. And then you could run into some problems if you aren't managing it during the wet times of the year, when maybe you want to pull some of the plate. So I think that thinking about some of the modern technology of control structures might be useful as we move forward.
One of the things Matt talked about was automation.
Yes.
And this is something that just really, really gets me excited, because thinking about precision agriculture and potentially precision drainage, really.
Right.
I mean, you could have a field, if it was targeted tiling, then you could, you know, manage that daily if you wanted to. Not that you would need to, because it's not going to float make that much difference, but just the ability to completely manage the water table in that field with automated control structures.
Knowing where the water table's at would be a big thing.
Yeah, and so I think, to me, there are commercial systems that you can do automated control drainage, but to me, the next steps would be in the data that you're collecting and how you're incorporating that data into management decisions. And if we think about corn or beans or really any crop, the amount of water it uses is going to change throughout the year. And so the value of water, in a sense, changes throughout the year.
Absolutely. It goes up and down.
And because of that, you would change how you manage. You know, you might want really high boards, a high elevation for your outlet in the summertime when you're very dry and your corn's using a lot of water. You might want a very low one in the spring when your crop's just getting started. And so building data collection and precision agriculture technology, soil moisture, potentially short-term forecasting, getting an estimation of ET rates from that crop. I mean, all those could come together to
tell you where your water level should be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's something that gets me really excited.
That's awesome.
Maybe if you could talk specifically about what you're doing to advance the science or outreach or any aspect of controlled drainage.
Yeah. So we're going on about 10, 12 years of controlled drainage research at our Southeast Research Farm. We've consistently seen nitrate reduction with that. We do a lot, or a fair amount of education around drainage design. So we have a drainage school in Iowa, or at least we did until 2020 with COVID, and really try to talk about, you know, how we can design this for controlled drainage in mind for the future. Try to do that with some other extension and outreach type of events. We have some of the work that's kind of ongoing as well at our Southeast Research Farm, and then we're going to do some new work with some other drain spacing and depth work, is to look at how does controlled drainage, or maybe if we put the drains in a little shallower, which is almost like a year-round controlled drainage, how might that impact fertilizer use, you know, nitrogen, kind of optimal nitrogen rates, and how might that compare to areas where maybe we don't have any drainage at all? Mike Castellano at Iowa State is leading a lot of these efforts, but trying to combine some of the water quality aspects, you know, water outflow aspects with some of the nitrogen use efficiency aspects as well. And so kind of how do we optimize drainage design or management with controlled drainage to enhance crop production and make the best use of the fertilizer that we're putting on as possible?
Interesting concept, combining it with nutrient efficiency.
Yeah. How do you think that would change things?
Well, you know, water and nitrate work together. I mean, without water, nitrate efficiency or nitrogen use efficiency goes down. So having the right amount of water there is going to increase the nitrogen use efficiency of that crop.
That's very true.
So if you can partner those together for optimum level, that should be a good thing.
Yeah.
We all want to see our nitrogen use efficiencies down to 0.7 or 0.8. I'm sure this year in some parts of our fields where it was very dry, our efficiencies were very poor because we didn't have enough water.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't just improve the water availability, but water availability affects a lot of other factors.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the, you know, law of the minimum, and water is part of that.
Sure. Makes sense.
I would just be concerned with where do you put that water table at?
If you're doing shallow?
Yes, with regard to where the roots are at and the stage of the crop, because we know reproductive stages on corn have a root system that can go very deep versus a younger corn, you know, they're more shallow. So do you move that water table down as those roots want to go down and encourage that? Or do you try to grow a crop that's only got roots in the top 2 feet?
Ooh, yeah, I'd say the first one would be my guess, or that would be my preference, I guess, but... There's a big gap between where we're at now and the ability to do that.
So. Yeah, the knowledge for where do you do that?
Yeah, so should we use controlled drainage?
I think we should use controlled drainage in places where site suitability seems most conducive for controlled drainage. I think we want to use it in pretty flat fields. We've done a little work with modeling and with some very small scale lysimeters that when we do have that higher water table, there might be a little bit more surface runoff. So I think having pretty flat fields where even if we got a little surface runoff, it's not maybe as critical or detrimental. Also, those flatter fields are going to work better for having fewer structures so that you might be able to manage 30 acres with one structure. I think then it becomes a little more economical and easier for the farmer to manage. You know, there's one other research aspect that I think we do need to still ponder with controlled drainage, and that's where does the water go? You know, if it's not coming out the tile line, where does it go? And making sure that that's not a nitrate problem. I think a little bit might go to surface runoff, a little bit more might go to deep seepage, but we would expect maybe some greater opportunity for denitrification as that water moves through those slower pathways. So I think controlled drainage can be good, but you know, I think site suitability might limit the applicability in certain areas.
There you have it.
There you have it. It's a good practice. It, you know, does a good job of reducing nitrate loads by holding that water back. But it's one tool in the toolbox, right? It's not going to fit everywhere.
Can you combine it with all the other tools and you got to apply the right one in the right situation.
Right. So, Jeff Strock, great guy. He's worked in drainage 20 plus years. And anyway, this is what he had to say about controlled drainage.
So one of the things that we have found over many years of working with controlled drainage or drainage water management is that it's been portrayed as kind of a win-win situation. So it's a win for farmers in terms of thinking about crop yields and water quality. We always have not seen this yield benefit in a year-in, year-out basis. But every year that we have implemented this practice, we do see water quality benefits. The main way, generally speaking, is a reduction in the drain outflow, less water leaving the system compared to, say, a free drainage type of a system. So less water leaving the system retains with it then in the soil profile the dissolved nitrogen or phosphorus, which, you know, may exit the system when we would normally have drain flows. So we always have had water quality benefits with controlled drainage. We just haven't always seen those yield benefits.
So a producer can really, you know, do some math and show maybe a return on that investment in that controlled drainage water system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can be a win-win. Not every year, like he said, but certainly there are years that controlled drainage is going to outperform conventional free drainage.
And then at the same time, the reduction in nitrate load is a benefit as well, back to the economics of growing a corn crop, but shows they're doing something.
Yeah, that's a good point, Anthony. And I mean, being able to manage water, really, it certainly can have benefits to yield, but if it's not very well managed, that can be a double-edged sword.
It's really been an interesting kind of journey. We did our research in a farmer's field, and so we were using very large field scale areas. And, you know, one of the things that we found was that Mother Nature is in control. So if she provides the water that we have to manage in the drainage system to conserve water, it can be advantageous. If we don't have water to store and say we get a dry period in a given year and we haven't stored any extra water, then you can have these years where you don't see a positive yield impact. We also have seen some years where we get very wet years. And if we don't manage the drainage system properly, we can actually end up seeing yield losses in fields where we've managed with controlled drainage, because we end up actually having excess water in the soil profile. And that can certainly have a negative impact on soil aeration and the oxygen available to the roots. And that can kind of reduce our yields in those years as well. You know, at the end of the day, water is the driving force in these systems, whether they work or they don't work for water quality and for yield. And again, generally what we have found is that, you know, if we've got water stored in our system and we get a short-term dry period during a growing season, it can be advantageous for yield. If we get into a severe drought, which we have had over the 15, 18 years that we did this research, you know, controlled drainage has not helped us during these really severe droughts. You know, there's just no water to be had to manage at those times.
You know, we were talking about that before, you know, how high do you keep that water table and when do you keep it there and for how long?
Yeah. I think that's why automation I see is one of the big potential exciting things about the future of controlled drainage, because you can take all that into account and make kind of on the fly changes to optimize the water availability without getting too much water. And kind of the paradigm for controlled drainage has been maybe three different outlet elevations. Okay, you have one where you drop it to conventional drainage in the spring. You know, you want your drainage system to be functioning as it should. And then after you've planted, after you've done field work, you raise it a little bit, not enough to drown those roots out, but enough.
Start storage,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So if you get any timely rains, you can take advantage of those. And then the third is maybe after harvest. So after you've done your field work in the fall, now you can raise the boards all the way up as high as you want, really, to hold the water over winter into the spring. But that really has limitations, both for getting too much water. I mean, we could potentially drown our plants out and
absolutely need drainage. You get one of those high mega rain events and you're in trouble.
Yeah. So Jeff really emphasized the need for active drainage, which hasn't been the current paradigm and is really kind of challenging under the current technology that's out there. But that gives the most advantage for yield potential and for water quality.
It's like managing an irrigation system.
It really is like managing an irrigation mm-hmm. system. That's a good metaphor, Anthony. So Jeff brought up a really interesting point about possibly in the future using something like a nitrate sensor.
You know, as we move into the future and we think about these things, we might also be able to, as the sensing technology comes online and perhaps gets less expensive, maybe we'll be able to use dynamic nitrogen sensors in these systems as well to help inform us, should we be letting water loose, should we not be letting water loose, and in terms of not only thinking about water, but also nutrient available in that water for the crop, but also, you know, what we might be releasing downstream.
Really, I mean, it comes down to what information do we have to make the decision about where we set the gate.
Yeah, right now I think there's a lot of just by your bootstraps, you know. You feel like you should put a gate in or take one out based upon how wet it's been and how dry it's going to be, or maybe the opposite. And we really need a lot more information to guide us in those steps.
So this is how Precision Ag in a lot of ways can also offer answers and solutions and really information that we need to make decisions about water too.
Yeah, we have those water, you know, those water probes that we can put in, those moisture probes in the soil. And yeah, I think it's coming. I think it could be there pretty soon.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. Be sure to tune in next week for part two. If you want to learn more about anything you heard today, head on over to the SDSU Extension website. But for now, I'm John McMain.
I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time.